Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is former Jaguars tight end George Reister, and you're listening to The Jake Brown Show.
And welcome to The Jake Brown Show right here on Radio.com, iTunes, and Spotify is where you find us. You can follow me on Twitter, at Jake Brown Radio, and you can follow our show at Jake Brown Show on all social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all of that jazz. A lot to get into today on the program. AFC and NFC Championship are here on Sunday. First game at 3 o'clock. The Jaguars, they did it, are headed to New England, headed to Foxborough to take on the Patriots. That game is at 3, and then 6:40, the Vikings, yes, we will get into it, are taking on the Eagles in Philly. And my God, the Vikings with the most miraculous finish you may ever see. One of the great finishes maybe in the history of sports with how that game turned out and how stunning it was. So we'll preview both of those AFC and NFC championships. We'll talk about the week that was in football, talk about a little baseball, some head coaching stuff, some other coaches. And we'll give out my movie of the week, as we call it, or we'll call it Flick of the Week. Instead of Flick of the Wrist, it'll be Flick of the Week, and what movie I saw this week that you should see. Because now I've been going to movies so much with this $7 a month movie pass. They're making all the damn money for me off popcorn, candy, and soda. But for unlimited movies for $7 a month, I've been going by myself to the movies at this point. And I don't even care. Judge me. I've been seeing movies left and right. So we'll talk about that. George Reister joins us later, the former Jaguar tight end who lost twice to the Patriots in the playoffs in Foxborough. So he knows a thing or two, literally two things, about losing to the Patriots on the road in the playoffs with the Jaguars, because he was there when it went down, and now the inevitable's coming again. The inevitable is on the way, folks. Patriots. Jaguars. A lot of people are on the Jaguars hype train. But here's the problem. In terms of what the NFL wants now, here's the possible matchups we have for the Super Bowl in Minnesota on the eve of my birthday, on February 4th. The Super Bowl possibilities: Patriots, Eagles, Brady versus Foles. Not a terrible matchup, not the worst of the four, but one that the Patriots would be heavily favored, even against a decent Eagles defense. Nick Foles isn't appetizing anyone, the other matchups. Patriots versus Vikings. In my mind, the clear-cut best matchup of the four that the NFL would want, and I think a casual fan would want. You get Brady versus Keenum. You get the Vikings' home angle of it, the only team in NFL history to have a home game for the Super Bowl. That's a story in itself. And you have that dominant, maybe the best defense in the league with the Jaguars, the Vikings' defense going up against Brady, and how much of a final chapter it would be for Brady if he wins his sixth Super Bowl and he does it in what is technically going to be a road game against the Vikings and all their fans that are going to be there. You have that story. The other game, the other two matchups include the Jaguars, so they're both bad. I'm sorry about hating the Jaguars, but Blake Bortles in the Super Bowl is just scary. The other two matchups, Jaguars-Eagles, which is clearly the worst of the four matchups. I know George Reister will make his pick later, so tune in for that. But he picked the worst matchup. Bortles versus Foles would just be disaster. You don't have the home team. It's tremendous for Eagles as they go for their first Super Bowl, and the same for the Jaguars. But in terms of a casual fan, that would be the Justin Timberlake Bowl. So it would be the Jaguars-Eagles. Jaguars-Vikings, another bad matchup. But again, you still have the Vikings home game angle to it. So that in itself is an interesting storyline. So that is not the best matchup, but it's not the worst. So in order of worst to best, fourth, Jaguars-Eagles, definitely the worst. Third, I'd say third would be Jaguars-Vikings, just because you're getting Bortles still in the Super Bowl. And then second, I think the Patriots are in the top two just because of Brady. Two is Brady, Foles, Patriots, Eagles. And the number one best matchup, hands down, is Patriots, Vikings. You get a lot of storylines there. But how did the Vikings get here? Oh, man. A touchdown to end the game, Case Keenum and Stephon Diggs. And the Saints had this game locked up. 10 seconds left. No timeouts. The Vikings need a pass and get out of bounds to set up a field goal and try to win it. Or they got to go to the length of the field, the Hail Mary, and get a touchdown. All the Saints need to do is when Stephon Diggs catches that ball, tackle him and make sure he doesn't get out of bounds. And it was close to that point where even if he did get out of bounds, there might have not been enough time left, or it would have been a very deep field goal. Instead, Diggs catches it, and the Saints secondary makes one of the most mind-boggling mistakes you will ever see on defense that costs them the game. I mean, missing that tackle is just mind-blowing. And if I'm not mistaken, was it Marshawn Lattimore who missed it, the Saints Defensive Rookie of the Year? It was Marcus Williams. He's been getting support since he missed the tackle. He went for the guy's knees, came from behind for no reason. All he had to do was stay back and tackle him in bounds. Even if you tackle him out of bounds, you're still in a potential position to win this football game. He did the one thing you could not do. And it's such a mind-blowing mistake that you can't seem to wrap your head around it, especially if you're a Saints fan. You had one job. That's the famous quote. You had one job, and he could not do the one freaking job he had to do. And bedlam happens. You feel for the Saints fans. You really, truly feel bad for that team because they were seconds away. It came to the point that Sean Payton was mocking the crowd. He did the skull chant, put his hands together before the game was over. And you know what the saying is, guys? Karma is a bitch. And karma was a bitch for Sean Payton and the Saints. Listen, I still think the Vikings are intriguing because of the fact that they might have home field. But I think the Saints would have made things very interesting as well. I think Saints-Eagles, if we had I think the NFL was hoping for a Breeze versus Brady Super Bowl. Because in terms of quarterbacks, that says the cream of the crop. If you get that, you're golden. Now we're getting either Keenum or Foles in it. And no disrespect to them, they've been okay. But Nick Foles has not been very good. And I think Keenum has been solid, and obviously the play was remarkable, got help from the defense. But Keenum's deserved my respect, and he's deserved your respect as a starting quarterback because he's got the job done, and he's got the targets. He's got Diggs. He's got Rudolph. He's got Murray and McKinnon in the backfield. He's got some guys. He's got some targets that could help him get the job done. But we can see one of two former backup quarterbacks getting to the Super Bowl. And there's nothing Drew Brees could do about that. He's got that defense to blame. And they're going to get the blame for the rest of their lives. Marcus Williams is going to be thinking about that play for the rest of his NFL career, however long it goes. And how about the Vikings being up 17-0 at half, and the Saints is nothing. Touchdown 17-7. Keenum interception leads to another Saints touchdown 17-14. And you know what? They still prevail at home. I mean, imagine being at that game and being a Vikings fan. You're about to go and try and beat the traffic. The only way we get this is a Hail Mary. And of all the dramatic things, They didn't even need to have to worry about Kai Forbath. He got the job done with his 50. Imagine Kai Forbath never made that field goal. No miraculous ending happens. If Kai Forbath misses that 53-yard field goal, the Saints are smooth sailing. They win the game. So Forbath finally gets the job done. And he was almost in a spot if Diggs was tackled out of bounds and the clock still at a second left, where it would have if it was in Foxborough, where 1 second turned into 100 seconds, they would have been in a spot where they would have had to trust Kai Forbath. And I think that's an alarming thing to worry about, because Kai Forbath is a very middle-of-the-pack kicker. And I keep talking about you need great kickers to win deep into the playoffs. And that's going to be something interesting to watch. Forbath versus Elliott. And now the Vikings, you go to Philly, you get Nick Foles, who escaped Atlanta as we transition to that game. In my mind, because of some horrific play calling by the Atlanta Falcons, excuse me. And I said with George Reister, you hate to make the drinking joke with Steve Sarkisian, who's a recovering kind of alcoholic, but you wonder what was in his drink during that game. Because you get to, what was it, the 5-yard line, you get within the 10 on first down. They did not run it once. They ran it 4 times. And they put themselves in an impossible position, and then they do that stupid rollout play on 4th down, which almost never works. Almost never works. And the Falcons had all the chances in the world to win that game, and the Eagles' defense got the job done in the red zone. But just some horrific play calling by Steve Sarkisian. I mean, nothing you could do about it. That game was ugly. It was the first of 2 ugly games of the day. The Patriots-Titans game, we don't even need to talk about because the Patriots took care of business easily. But you feel for the Falcons. I mean, the state of Georgia is just struggling. It's just struggling. And you have the 28-3 collapse in the Super Bowl last year. You have Georgia Bulldogs football collapse in the national championship last week. And on top of that, and it was a bad week for Georgia, on top of that, the Falcons get in the red zone, get within the 5-yard line, down by 5, touchdown wins it, and they have 4 miserable play calls. Don't run it once with Devontae Freeman and that run game who was lighting up the Eagles defense, and they lose. The Falcons deserve to lose. That's just embarrassing. Once you're in there, you got to pound it in. Get that in the end zone and seal it. And the Eagles were using timeouts. They're saying, you know what? We're going to play to get this ball back and hope for a field goal and tie this thing if you make the 2-point conversion, or we'll hope to the field goal to win it if you don't get the 2-point conversion. And the Falcons couldn't even get the damn touchdown to make it interesting. The Steelers made it interesting. The Steelers came back against the Jaguars. But again, and now Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator, is probably gone because of this alone. On 4th and goal, getting into the red zone, they do a stupid toss play to Le'Veon Bell. They throw it backwards on 4th and inches instead of just running it right up the gut. Again, you had one job, and Todd Haley didn't do it. You have Big Ben. The guy's nickname is Big Ben. The ball is essentially over the first down marker. Literally, QB sneak, a Madden special, a fullback dive. If not, worst comes to worst, you give it to Le'Veon Bell, and he'll get it up the middle. Instead, you toss it to Bell. You're 5 yards behind, and then you got to work magic against the top defense of the league. Just some embarrassing play calling, and that could not have shifted the momentum anymore. I believe the score then was 14-0. The Jaguars went on to score a touchdown, 21-0. If the Steelers get that, they score 14-7, and it's a whole different ball game. They score that touchdown. You know what? The Steelers maybe win that game. They end up losing by 3 because they get that garbage time touchdown, and then with 1 second, they didn't even do an onside kick. They did a squib kick. I mean, why not even try an onside kick? You kick it so deep, you give yourself no chance unless they embarrassingly fumble it or take some bizarre bounces. But Steve Sarkisian and Todd Haley, you guys are dopes of the week. Poor play calling. And the Jaguars shocked the Steelers in Pittsburgh. 45-42, almost double. It was double the over-under. Nobody saw that coming. And the Steelers just couldn't come back. And that one play call shifted the entire momentum of that game. And they're here. They're here for good. The Jaguars are here. They shocked me. I said on Twitter, zilch, zero chance. They win. And now they're going to Foxborough. And it is not going to be the same situation. Do they have a shot? I'm going to say they do, because last week I was wrong by giving them no shot. They start off fiery and just running it up the gut. Leonard Fournette and Blake Bortles making throws when he needs to. But this is a brand new season. This is Foxborough in January. And we talk with George Reister about it on the show. He's coming up after this segment about trying to win there. He did it twice and they lost with the Jaguars. This is different. This is not a good matchup for the Jags. I think the Patriots are going to win this football game. Blake Bortles 2-0 in the playoffs. Tom Brady 26-9. The Patriots from week 6 to 17 have allowed the fewest points per game in the league. And the Patriots are going to force Bortles to throw. They're going to try and keep it out of Fournette's hands early. And if they could just get an early lead, goodbye, Jacksonville. They're going to have to pray for Bortles to complete a whole lot of passes. And that is a recipe for disaster. So I think the Patriots right now are clicking. They're dominating, and it's not a good matchup for the Jaguars. I don't think it'll be a blowout, but I think the Patriots should win this football game 24-13 and move on as Brady looks for his sixth Super Bowl ring. 24-13, Patriots win. The Eagles and the Vikings right now, all the momentum on their side. The fact that they're even here is remarkable. They have to come off from that high and go win in Philly, a tough atmosphere. But Nick Foles just hasn't done enough for me to think that he can go and win this game against that Vikings defense. These teams, the last time they played, week 7 of 2016 season, Eagles handed the Vikings their first loss of the season. Remember, the Vikings were 5-0 and they finished 8-8. But you got to scrap that game from your memory. It was Sam Bradford versus Carson Wentz in that football game. And there's a story behind this, Keenum Foles. Both were teammates in 2015 under none other than Rams head coach Jeff Fisher. Keenum went to the Vikings, Foles to the Eagles, and now they're playing each other. Here's the key to this game. The key for the Eagles is if they can dominate the run game and take it out of Nick Foles' hands. That's the key. But doing it against that Vikings front seven is nearly impossible. And Jay Ajayi, since he's got to the Eagles, he's averaging 6 yards a carry. They're going to need him to carry that rock potentially 25 times and make sure they don't get down early in this game and hope that they can run it that many times where they're not forced to pass with Foles. But Foles just hasn't shown enough to us to make us believe in him, even at home. He just hasn't done it. He wasn't awful last week. He was not awful. We could say that. He had respectable numbers. He was 23 of 30 for 246 yards. His longest pass was 32 yards. He had no touchdowns, and the key was he had no picks. But Case Keenum, man. The legend of Case Keenum. Case Keenum is chasing a check. He's already about to get paid. If he can take this team to a Super Bowl and maybe, who knows, win one at home, he's a hero. 25 of 40, a touchdown and a pick, 318 yards last week. The battle of the backups, and one of them is going to a Super Bowl. One of them could be a home game in the Super Bowl. The other could be the backup to Carson Wentz and take the Eagles to the promised land for the first time ever. The Eagles have never won a Super Bowl, and this is their chance. But the Vikings, man, that defense is hard to stop, and the secondary is playing well. The Eagles are going to lose this game. I'm sorry, but Nick Foles hasn't played well enough. I think this will be a tight one. I think it'll be a much better game, as all the NFC games have been. then the AFC, then the Patriots, Jaguars. But I think the Eagles are going to have a home Super Bowl this year, and I think that's what they're looking forward to. I think it's going to be tight, pretty low scoring. I'm going to go 20-17. The Vikings beat the Eagles on Sunday night, which sets up for the Super Bowl that you'd like to see. The home team, the Vikings, taking on Brady and the Pats and Belichick. Will it be their swan song? I think they'll both be back, but who knows if they make another Super Bowl. With the way it's going, they probably will. But Patriots, Vikings, Super Bowl. This is the Jake Brown Show on Radio.com, iTunes, and Spotify. Coming up in a little bit is George Reister. Also coming on the show this week, Thomas Jones, former NFL Pro Bowl running back, will join us. And Len Elmore, college basketball analyst, former NBA big man, former Maryland Terrapin, will join us. And that's an interesting conversation we have with him, more than just the game of college basketball, but talking about NYC and street ball in New York City and LeVar Ball and his kids in Lithuania and how bad of a decision that might have been. So some good interviews on the show this week. My flick of the week is The Post. I mean, name a more iconic duo, folks, than Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. I mean, that's the cream of the crop. It doesn't get much better than those two. And the movie is interesting, especially if you're in this industry, because it's about journalism and it's about the Pentagon Papers and the potential of a paper getting shut down for kind of leaking these documents. And it turned out to be a happy ending. But definitely worth a see, because the fact that it's Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks as a star, how are you not going to see it? And it's very interesting just what the Washington Post had to do in that situation. Do you publish a story? Do you not? Do you put this out there and risk your chance of maybe going to even jail or not? And the trials and tribulations of that and deadlines. Really cool movie with two just, I mean, legendary actors, actresses in Streep. Hanks, Streep Hanks 2020. So go see The Post. That is my flick of the week. Some other minor news before we get to some non-sports stuff. Pat Shurmur expected to become the Giants head coach. Vikings offensive coordinator. It's a very move. It's like the Mets signing Jay Bruce. You bring back a guy and you're trying to bring back the 2017 team that won 72 games. I like Jay Bruce. I think the price is good, but there's still a lot more to do for the Mets. Shurmur, we'll see. I mean, he had 2 years head coaching experience with the Browns, and he won more games with them than they've won in the last 3 years. So maybe it works out, but who knows? But that's that. Andrew McCutchen was traded from the Giants to the Giants from the Pirates. Good trade for the Giants. Didn't have to give up a ton. And now you have him and Evan Longoria. I mean, what an offseason the Giants are having. Should Mike Tomlin be fired is a debate everyone's having. No. Yeah, we talked about Reister. There's not a better replacement. It's simple as that. Chris Paul, James Harden, Rockets, they're going to get some form of suspension. A couple of those guys will get suspended. Kind of entering the locker room and starting a fight with the Clippers after they lost to the Clippers. And Mike D'Antoni says Blake Griffin intentionally hit him before. And that is just a disaster. And that was funny to just see on Twitter and people talking about the secret passageway that Chris Paul was going through to get to that locker room. I'm sure it wasn't that difficult. I'm sure it was not a secret passageway. So that was a funny story. Aaron Aflalo throwing a punch last night. Interesting story. NBA turning into the UFC overnight. I mean, how about that? He came out swinging, Aaron Aflalo. I saw T.I. commenting on the House of Highlights Instagram and kind of say, damn, the NBA's for real this year. And then people are loving it. I mean, these are stories, punches being thrown, and people live for this. Baseball, hockey, all these sports dream of things like that happening. The attention that Bryce Harper thing got when he threw the helmet at the pitcher, I mean, these sports live for these moments. So, I mean, look, people are still talking about Aaron Aflalo and the other guy. I can't even pronounce his name. People love that stuff. All right, some off-the-field stuff before we go. Tide Pods. I mean, Pat, what is wrong with people eating Tide Pods? it leads to spike in poison control calls. It's a Tide Pod challenge, but this could be potentially deadly for people. I mean, I've heard of crazes and like you hear like stuff with glue and random stuff like that, but like eating a Tide Pod as a challenge just seems alarming. And then the pepper challenge is now a thing now, the red pepper challenge.
Yeah, but the stuff in...
That's edible, though.
Right, it's not edible. Why would you want to put that in your body? That's just crazy. I don't get them.
Are people trying to clean out their body? They're hoping a Tide Pod would get them cleaner or something?
Yeah, I don't get that. Why would you think like, hey, look, this color stuff, let's drink it. Like, I don't...
We
What's
live in a strange
your
world. Yeah, I mean, I can't explain it. I mean, I don't see it as being something appetizing. There's certain things you eat as a joke, like a bug or something. People have done that. I don't know, just random things. But eating a Tide Pod.
No, that's just weird.
Yeah, and that sounds like danger. Donald Trump sounds like danger always, and even he works in our way in our show. We don't even like politics here. Adult film star Stormy Daniels talked about Trump cheating on Melania with this porn star. And, oh my goodness, the quotes of this are just unreal. Let's take a look first at Stormy Daniels. Let's see what porn star we're looking at here. Trump and Sanders had sex 4 months after Melania gave birth. I mean, does it surprise you that he cheated? I mean, she definitely is a fox. She's definitely a MILF. Wow. Stormy Daniels' popularity on Pornhub skyrockets after Donald Trump affair. you would expect it to. Some of the quotes behind this, the sex was textbook generic, she said. I actually don't even know why I did it. But I do remember while we were having sex, I was like, please don't try to pay me. I would have just took the check, the cash, but I was there. I'm going to call you. And Trump said, we have to get you on The Apprentice. So he was, I guess, trying to finagle that for her. The good thing, I guess, is that it was consensual. With everything going on and with the Aziz Ansari story, which I'm not even talking about it, I think that was a little bit blown over the top with that alleged stuff going on. But there's a new story every day, and you can't believe everyone that you hear. And some of them, when you read behind, like the Aziz one, you're kind of like, I don't know about that one. But I'm glad this was at least consensual. I mean, she said, you know what? She banged Trump and she was admitted to it. So Trump denies the encounter, even though she admits, I mean, it obviously happened. He did not comment on the alleged $130,000 payment. So this is the one that he paid off to quiet. This was the hush money, was Stormy. Interesting.
But he said it never happens.
And you know, yeah, I mean, no. It definitely happened. And, no. And Stormy, you know, is coming out with this because she knows it's going to be a top headline. And look, it is trending. So you don't blame her. And now Pornhub searches for her are up the wazoo. No pun intended. This is the Jake Brown Show, radio.com. We're all over the place, per usual. Next week, finally, we're hoping to move to the new studio. And I think it'll be more of a normal show. And we can have a little bit more fun. Maybe bring the soundboard back. We're moving to Sophia Bowman from The Voice to next week. We'll do some karaoke with her. We'll have a little bit more creativity and hopefully guests in studio. I'm working on getting Sarah Pribus, one of the hosts of HQ Trivia, in studio for next week. She is a fine-looking lady as well. So she may be coming in. You may have seen her while you play HQ, all the million people that play. Have you been playing HQ?
No, I wanted to, and I was going to sign, download the app. I was going to get the app and play like that night, and then, what was it, 4 o'clock?
Yeah.
Or whatever it is, and then I
did 3 and 9, yeah.
3 and 9, and then I didn't. And
I'm going to send you my referral code if you haven't played, because then I could get an extra life.
Okay, send me the code. I do want to. I want to give it a shot.
My code is Jay Swizzy. Shameless plug in my HQ. Again, you end up winning a couple dollars because so many people win and you split it. If it's $2,000 prize, if 50 people win, you're only winning $4.
Is it easy to win?
No, it's impossible. You have to get through 12 questions. It's very hard. But the issue is what I just learned recently. You can only cash out if you're only at $20 or $25 or more. So if you only win $5, you have to win like five times just to even see any of the money. Okay. So that's why they're probably not paying anyone almost anything. When they give out the big prize, they pay. But when they do these little prizes, none of these people are able to cash out unless they win multiple times. So unless you're winning $25 or more in one sitting, which is very hard with how popular the game has got, it's not costing them a ton to give away this money because you can't touch the money until you hit a certain amount. So now that I've learned that, it makes me understand things a little bit more.
Is it still fun to play? Like, is it worth playing?
Yeah, but it's very easy to lose.
It's easy to, you know, so you're not going to win anything. If I win, I'm going to win $5 and I'm not going to get it anyway.
Yeah, well, there was, when they do the big prize, like they had a $16,000 one and there were only two winners, so they won $8,000 each. That's when it's amazing.
But they're probably like 100,000 people playing.
Yeah, no, there's more. There's a million people. It goes from a million down, and then the fact that night it was like 500,000, 600,000, and went down to those two, and that's crazy that only two won. Usually it's more. Because a lot of times you'll have people in the same room, like a group of 20, and they'll guess different things till one person wins.
Right.
So it's kind of like unfair. When you were the big group, you had a disadvantage because they could guess the wrong answers. For ones they don't know and have people guess different answers, and there's going to be people still alive. So that's the way to play, to do it with a big group versus just one person or two. That's the advantage. And if you have Google, that's an advantage at times, but the questions are so quick that it's hard to Google a lot of these. And some of these aren't questions you could just type in something and Google. You could kind of be creative and maybe find something quick, but you have to be laser on it on Google because they only give you 10 seconds from the start of the reading of the question, and then it's done. It disappears. If you don't answer, you're out. So it goes very quick. So we'll maybe do a little HQ trivia with Sarah next week and ask her some trivia questions and do a spin on that. So more things to come. Again, thanks everybody for listening. Coming up next is George Reiser, former Jaguars tight end. Subscribe on iTunes. Go to the podcast section of your iPhone. Rate us 5 stars. Write a review. And Spotify, just search The Jake Brown Show and you'll find us there. Stitcher as well. Radio.com. Podcast.radio.com/Jake Brown. Thomas Jones tomorrow. Len Elmore, college basketball analyst tomorrow. But coming up next, former Jaguars tight end George Reister previews and talks everything football, but he previews the AFC and NFC championship right here on The Jake Brown Show. Peace, everybody.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And welcome back to The Jake Brown Show. Radio.com, iTunes, and Spotify is where you find us. I cannot believe it. The Jacksonville Jaguars, and I've doubted them all season long, are off to the AFC Championship to face Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. That's right. Blake Bortles is in the AFC Championship. And we had Donovan Darius, the former Jaguars safety, on a couple of weeks ago. And we talked about this guy who joins us now, George Reister, the former Jaguar tight end from 03 to 08. George, good to talk to you again, man. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. Jake, how are you, man?
Doing well. Just trying to fight the constant weather, climate changes here in New York. I mean, Mother Nature, it is that time of the month every day for Mother Nature in New York because you get snow one day and the next day it's 60 degrees and you think you're out in L.A.
And then, too, you guys had a special weather event this year. I saw was it a bomb cyclone?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a remix to the Baby Bash cyclone song. That's what it was. classic rap song. And you can catch George on his Facebook show, The Unafraid Show. And George, never afraid to voice a strong opinion. And you were going at it on Twitter a little bit with a guy I was just talking to downstairs, Sean Marash, the producer of the DA show. I don't remember what you guys were tweeting about, but there was something. What was it exactly? I don't remember.
Oh, which time? It was
a couple days ago or last week.
I think it was about the elite quarterbacks.
Maybe. I don't know. Mraz likes to argue with people, so.
Yeah. Well, listen, everybody wants to call their quarterback elite. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, Matt Ryan's elite. No, he's not. There are, like, okay, the definition of the word elite means, like, special, over and above, like a special segment of the crowd, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are 32 NFL teams. If you take the top five, if you take five quarterbacks, who there are five quarterbacks in the league right now that can keep you in any game, win any game, despite no defense, despite no running game, despite no offensive line, they literally find a way to do the impossible. And those guys are Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady,
mm-hmm.
Drew Brees,
mm-hmm.
Russell Wilson, mm-hmm. and Ben Roethlisberger.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the 32 quarterbacks, that's 15% of the population. So if your quarterback is in the 25th percentile, don't even talk to me about him being elite. There aren't, mm-hmm. like, there is no elite, no nothing special, nothing extraordinary about anybody in the 25th or the 30th percentile of anything.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd put Maddie there. And in terms of last week and the Eagles, I mean, surely a disaster on his part. Also a disaster. I mean, Steve Sarkisian, I hate to make a joke about him drinking because he was a former alcoholic and you can't really joke about that stuff because it's serious. But what is he doing make with his play calling, man, late in that game? I mean, they're at the 2 or whatever, the 5-yard line, not running the ball once. A run game that was doing pretty well. I mean, what are they doing?
Man. Oh, man, dude, that was poor. That was Mike Tomlin-esque, dude. Mm-hmm. I mean, him and Todd Haley. But the thing that I couldn't – here's the thing about Matt Ryan, though. How many times, right? So Matt Ryan's not a guy who can, like, will you back into a game. Well, I think we can all agree on that. But what is the book on Matt Ryan? Like, what do you hear all the time? Oh, he played good enough to win. What? There's no time that you ever say Aaron Rodgers played good enough to win. I mean, like, that's like a cop-out. Like, Ben Roethlisberger never, quote-unquote, plays good enough to win. No, you either win or you don't, or you give yourself an opportunity to win. Matt Ryan doesn't have that 400-yard game after they're down by 21 points and do something heroic. Like, he's never an actual hero, and that's what the elite quarterbacks are.
You mentioned Todd Haley before, and there's rumors it looks like he's going to be out. Do you think that's the right decision by the Steelers after that game? Well, it looks like it's official that they're not going to bring him back. But, I mean, after that draw, I mean, the toss play on 4th and goal. Oh, my God, 4th and inches.
Oh, that was horrendous.
Do you agree with that decision to get rid of him?
Yes, but not just because of that game.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of what Ben Roethlisberger said after he came out and said it yesterday. He said, because people asked him why he didn't check into a quarterback sneak based upon the look that they had on the defensive front. He said, I'm not allowed to check out of plays.
What is he, a child in daycare? Like, come on.
And he said, I am not allowed to change any call that Todd Haley makes. And I just thought that was absolutely asinine.
Mm-hmm.
How can you have Ben Roethlisberger is going to the Hall of Fame.
For sure.
He's a two-time Super Bowl champion, even though they won the first one in spite of him instead of because of him.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been awesome. He can win every game, just been phenomenal. So that guy is not allowed to check out of a play. That means your offensive coordinator has too much ego. And if he's got that much ego, he can never be wrong. And he was dead wrong for that toss play. Ugh. He was wrong for the toss play. He was wrong for the pass play on 4th and 1. I mean, it was absolutely horrendous in the most important timing.
Yeah, and I mean, that shifted the momentum of the game. It was 14-0. They turned it over. Jaguars score. It's 21-0. It could have been 14-7, I believe. It could have been a brand new ball game. And if you run it up the gut with even if you do a fullback dive, one of my favorite Madden plays on 4th and inches, do one of those. I mean, it's no excuse to throw the ball backwards 5 yards and hope Le'Veon's going to do all this work and get past the top defense in the league. You just can't expect it.
Am I the only person though that felt like when the Steelers got to 28-21? and got the ball back, didn't you feel like the game was over in the Steelers' favor?
Oh, yeah, it was over. I mean,
despite being down 7 points.
Even at 21-0.
They're actually going to cover.
Yeah, even when they were down, I'm like, they're going to fight back. I mean, there's no way it ends like this.
Bad play calling struggled. 7 in the third quarter with the ball. Yep. They came out, scored after halftime, got the Jaguars to punt, and then they're across the 50, and you're like, oh, wow, the Steelers are actually going to cover in this game despite being down 21-0. Mm-hmm. And then they find a way to lose. It was just, I mean, and the defense was bad. That onside kick by Tomlin was bad.
Mm-hmm.
But then you come out and hear these yahoos talking about that they're going to try to lobby or petition Art Rooney, the owner of the Steelers, the controlling person, to fire Mike Tomlin. Mm-hmm. That's the stupidest thing I've heard this week. Probably.
He's too good a coach, and I know what's happened, and they've struggled a bit. But I mean, Mike Tomlin's done so much there, and you just, when you have a coach like that, you ride with him. You don't get rid of him.
He's lost 48 games in the last 4 years. That's 12 mm-hmm. wins a year, including their playoff wins. Like, nobody's doing that. And I've said it, and I'm putting it in my book. Because I'm in the process of writing a book as well.
Oh, nice.
This is going to be one of the chapters. There are two rules to firing a coach. Like, I've come up with a foolproof system on whether you need to fire a coach or not. I've never been proven wrong. I believe after every season, you have to evaluate a coach. Every season, no matter whether you won the Super Bowl, the national championship, or you went defeated, like 0-1, whatever. You didn't win one game. Every coach needs to be evaluated after every season. And you have to ask yourself two questions. Number one, is there a coach out there that we can guaranteed get that's better than the guy we have right now? So if you're Mike Tomlin, who would you fire Mike Tomlin for?
There's no one.
Besides Bill Belichick.
Now that Gruden's off the board, there's no one.
I mean, but even Gruden could be iffy, right?
Yeah, it's been a while.
So that's the first one. So that answer is no. You cannot guarantee get a better coach. Where like if you're Tennessee who fired Mike Mularkey, you're like, I'm pretty sure we can get a better coach.
Although right? that was a little mysterious, considering they made the playoffs and won a playoff game. There must have been something that we don't know about. Then that's the reason he's gone, because they had a great year.
He's not sane. Do you understand? Mike Mularkey's not sane. At the point in time after the first of all, if the rumors are true that Marcus Mariota started calling his own plays in the Kansas City game, then, you know, that's already a problem. If your quarterback's got to start calling plays for your offense to get going. But the second reason why I say he wasn't fit to be head coach anymore is when he said, Terry Rubisky did a great job with the offense in 2017, and he didn't anticipate making any changes. That means that you're crazy. You're absolutely crazy. Like, your quarterback regressed. You were scoring 23 points a game in 2016. Mm-hmm. Now you're scoring 20 points a game. You went from in the, like, 11th in total offense to, like, 23rd in total offense. Like, you cannot say he did a great job. And you got absolutely outcoached. It was a mismatch. The Titans ownership had no choice.
Mm-hmm.
Like he showed that he wasn't sane, and the fact that you didn't feel, and you feel like, okay, there has to be a better coach in terms of what we can get right now. So that's the first rule of coaching. And the second rule of coaching is there a loss of hope? Is can this dude walk into the locker room, if it's the pros, walking to a free agent dinner, or in college, walk into a kid's house and sell them on the future is brighter than the past? Whether you won a national championship or you went defeated, the point in time where you stop being able to sell hope, you got to make a change. And Mike Tomlin can still sell hope. Mike Mularkey couldn't sell hope anymore.
Yeah, and I think the players truly respect Mike Tomlin versus some other coaches, a la Ben McAdoo, who I think a lot of players lost respect for in the locker room and a lot of these coordinators should take over, and now Pat Shurmur likely to take over. Not sure. How do you think that's going to pan out for the Giants? Was that the right hiring for them?
It's always a wait and see, because Pat Shurmur, he was the Vikings coordinator, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you generally know what you're getting. So Mike Zimmer was the defensive coordinator with the Bengals. And he took a fabulous defense with the Bengals and then turned it into a fabulous defense with the Vikings. And now you have Shurmur, who was the head of that defense. In logic says he should be able to, at worst, make the Giants a good defense.
Well, Shurmur was the offensive coordinator.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Well, it was the offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that Shurmur, he was able to make the Vikings a respectable offense. Like, he's got and without an elite quarterback. So he's able to make Case Keenum, who from 2012 to 2016 looked like a fringe NFL player, not just a fringe NFL starter, but a fringe NFL quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Made him look like, okay, hold up, there might be something to this. Made Bridgewater look good. Made Sam Bradford look good. So he took two dudes in Bradford and Case Keenum, took him out of the scratch and dent bin, and made him look good. And he's able to run the football. Dalvin Cook goes down, no problem. Latavius Murray and McKinnon are doing well. I mean, so you know. I think that it'll work.
He coached the Browns for 2 years, George, and he had 9 wins in those 2 seasons, which is more than the Browns have had in the last 3 seasons combined.
See, exactly. He's a miracle worker. He can turn water into wine if you can make Cleveland win games.
Yeah, and he's been mostly an offensive coordinator throughout his career, the Rams, the Eagles, the Vikings, the most recent. But he did have those 2 years of head coaching. And you put him 2 years with the Browns is putting him 2 years in a volcano. I mean, you got to see him here with the Giants, who are going to spend.
Bill Belichick failed with Nick Saban as his defensive coordinator with the Browns.
Yeah.
So you have to take any Browns news with, like, a grain of salt.
That's two goats on the same sideline, by the way.
Yeah. And I am all in on giving coordinators head coaching jobs and all that. I'm not with the recycling of head coaches very much, because – because there are so many young, talented coordinators, or even old, talented coordinators, who haven't gotten a proper shot, and you keep recycling for so long. How many times did we see the Marty Schottenheimers rehired, mm-hmm. and whoever, and a guy like Jeff Fisher?
Oh gosh!
If Jeff Fisher gets a head coaching job, I might boycott their team. I might lead a coup.
Yeah, I mean
a Clay Travis like coup, like he did with Tennessee, and I have no emotional investment to them.
And they'll be guaranteed wherever he goes to go 7-9 or worse, because he's the king of 7-9. But of course, he is responsible for the Rams' success, as he said. He said he shaped this team to who they are. And when you look at that, the two guys starting against each other in the NFC Championship were quarterbacks under none other than Jeff Fisher, Case Keenum, and Nick Foles with the Rams.
Yeah.
I mean,
that
Jeff Fisher loves that.
He shaped them. So you're telling me that if that's the case, so you're going to tell me that Jared Goff, Case Keenum, and
Nick Foles
all looked like they sucked when you were the coach. So he got them going
in the right direction. Gave them a pat on the back, and now everything's all grand.
Man, get out of here. If that's the case, then he doesn't need to be a head coach. He needs to be a consultant.
Yeah, I don't think he'll get another head coaching job. That would shock me. I don't want to
wish bad on anybody's future and mm-hmm. career. It's more about other people having opportunities than not wanting him to have an opportunity.
And it's not wishing bad. He'll be fine. He's got money and he'll find something. There's certain people you can feel wish bad upon, and you know they'll be okay. And then there's others you're just a dick.
Yeah. He you be a consultant, a pat on the back guy.
Yeah, there you go.
He'll get you in proper position, I guess.
George Reister joining us. Follow him on Twitter at George Reister and check out the Unafraid Show. Played with the Jaguars from 03 to 08. Let's preview this game, George. The Jaguars, again, somewhat of a heavy underdog. The Patriots are 8.5-point favorites. Tom Brady, 26-9 in the playoffs. Blake Bortles, 2-0. Look at that as you will. The Patriots have allowed the fewest points per game in the NFL from week 6 to 17. The Pats here, George, are going to want Bortles to throw and keep it out of Leonard Fournette's hands. How do you see this game playing out?
The Jaguars defense has a huge responsibility. Mm-hmm. They have to find a way to get Tom Brady to kick field goals or Gutkowski to kick field goals. Like, they have to find a way to stop their offense. And you know, which is a difficult task. However, we have seen it done in the playoffs before. When you get pressure on Tom Brady, he stinks. Just like every other quarterback in the league. If you get too much, except for Aaron Rodgers, mm-hmm. you get pressure on them, they're awful. And so you have to get pressure on Tom Brady, and their front has the ability to do it. But if you notice, last week, Gronkowski didn't have a huge impact on the game. And people are saying, should they put Jalen Ramsey on him and all that? No, don't put Jalen Ramsey on him, because of what the Patriots did last week was they were facing an elite pass rush or a potential elite pass rush with the Titans. So what they did is they put their back and Rob Gronkowski on the edge of the tackles of like a number of times in the game in passing situations, and they would chip the defensive ends. That means that they hit the defensive ends before they go run a route. So it doesn't allow them to get vertical and do too much that are working in short areas, and you don't want to waste Jalen Ramsey on that if that's what they're doing. So the Jaguars defense has to get pressure on Tom Brady. And then their offense has to be able to run the football, and not only run the football, but run the football and score points. And Blake Bortles has to continue to not be Blake Bortles from last year. He's got to be Blake Bortles from 2 years ago, the 35 touchdown guy. He can't be the Blake Bortles from last year. He's got to protect the football, and he's got to just be efficient. He's got to be Alex Smith to win. Like, he doesn't have to be Tom Brady to win. He's just got to be Alex Smith to win.
And, George, I think that's what makes it difficult for the Jaguars to win. They can't solely rely on a defensive touchdown that they've been getting and their defense to really be elite to win this game. They have to have good quarterback play. You can't have Leonard Fournette and the defense beat the Patriots in New England. You know how it is. You guys lost twice in the playoffs in New England. You've experienced it twice. It's heartbreak. The second time, you guys were coming off an electric win over the Steelers on the road and then kept it close versus the Patriots. But you know how it is. January in Foxborough is a different animal.
Well, and the main thing the Patriots do well, they do two things really well. They self-scout, so they know what they do. Right, so they know all the things that they've done, and they recognize their tendencies. Whoever does their stats and analytics and all this stuff for them does a phenomenal job, because they self-scout. They know what they've done, so they know what you think that they are going to do, because they've done it all year, and then they come out and do something else in that same situation, and they do a great job of scouting you, so mm-hmm. they know what it is that you do. And I say that to say, when one of the years when we played up in Foxborough, I remember we used to run this play. I forget what it was called on third down. And I told the coaches, I said, Coach, I told our offensive coordinator, I think it was Dirk Cutter at the time. I said, Dirk, we keep running this play on third down. This is in the week leading up to practice. I said, let's, for the playoffs, let's flip it over. Like, the exact same play, just flip it over the other way. So, because it was a 2x2 set, so two, and so I said, instead of running it this way, let's just run it the other way, because we've run it this way probably 30 times this season, 30, 40 times this year. He says to me, no, man, we got it. I know what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. What happens the first time we call that play? Asante Samuel pick six, bro. And then I remember being over there. I just kind of glanced at him like, huh. I didn't see that one coming, buddy.
Yeah. Can you speak to that? Just trying to win there, and just you're going up against the greatest quarterback, the greatest coach, and in an electric environment. This isn't easy for a young Jaguars team, very young team.
The best thing that Jaguars have going for them is that they are young and dumb. Like, they're not like, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, they don't have a whole lot of NFL experience, so they don't understand how difficult it is to do what they're trying to do. And they don't even care, because when you go up to Foxborough, you are swimming with Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
You are playing against Belichick, who is such a great coach. You're playing against Brady. And then if you notice, I can't be the only one that notices this, it just seems like the Patriots get a lot of breaks from the referees.
Every week, same thing. It's so unbelievable.
So you're playing against the refs. And then you're playing against the little sneaky stuff that the Patriots do. I know you've heard about coaches getting stuck in elevators.
Mm-hmm.
They used to melt one side of the field with the coils underneath. They have, you know,
deflated balls.
They've spied on people. They've all this. So not only do you have to contend against Belichick, Brady, and the refs, but then you got to beware of, and the best thing they do, most often is quarterbacks' headsets often go out.
Of course. Yep.
And it's just like, dude, and the last time it happened that it got publicly talked about was Mike Tomlin on opening night. I think it was 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you're sitting there like, come on, man. It was 2016 at the time. And you're sitting there like, no, there's no reason why analog headsets should be going out. Like, there is no reason that should be happening. And it's not like Foxborough is the Bermuda Triangle, man.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to know that there is some purpose to it, just like the clock that mysteriously didn't start.
The longest 1 second in football history. I mean, how does that happen?
It didn't even start on time. Oh. It didn't start or end on time.
Oh, my God. And that's what makes it frustrating. The Patriots find ways to cheat, and then the refs are like, all right, we're going to help you cheat even more by making these terrible calls. Oh, the clock operator must have took a nap. I mean, it's something new every week. George, before we let you go, prediction time. First off, Jaguars, Patriots, who wins, what's the score? And then Eagles, Vikings.
I didn't think I was as emotionally invested in the Jaguars winning
you got to be. It's your squad.
Because of that. And then also I'm emotionally invested because I think that Jalen Ramsey is a national treasure right now, and I want to hold him dear, and I want him to come true on his prediction. I want to see a whole week of Super Bowl interviews with him. But they're double-digit underdogs, and the Patriots always cover. So I am going with the Patriots to lose. I'm going with Jacksonville to shock the world, man. They are going to win on a last-second field goal.
So what is it, like 31-28 or something?
Oh, my God. I don't know if they can
score. Not that many, yeah.
I don't know if they can score 31 points. I'm going to go 28-25.
I think that was a prediction from the heart more than what's actually going to happen. And I don't blame you. I mean, if my team or if I played for a team, I'd be rooting for them too. And you know what? This wouldn't be – I mean, it shocked me that they beat the Steelers. But at this point, the Jaguars are playing with house money anything could kind of happen.
Why can't it happen? Exactly.
Yeah.
Because
why
I thought
not?
They were going to lose to the Steelers.
Yeah.
And now I'm saying, why not?
Yeah, exactly. What happens to the NFC?
The NFC, I think that the Eagles just seem like a team of destiny right now. And, you know, and the Vikings, they expired their rabbit's foot already. They've already called in their one wish. They had to sell their soul to get that to happen on Sunday.
Yeah.
But
so you're going with the Eagles.
I think that their defense is good enough, and the Vikings' offense is not explosive enough to where we're going to see the same type of game that we saw in Philadelphia last week. It's going to be a grinded out, not going to be super high scoring, which lends itself to Nick Foles not having to be spectacular, where Nick Foles can just, you know, be okay and they can win, where he can be the game manager, the Alex Smith, and win.
And if your prediction, George, comes true, if it's Jaguars-Eagles, it will be renamed the Timberlake Bowl because no one will be watching for the game. The ratings will be terrible if it's Jaguars-Eagles, and everyone will be watching the halftime show, and that's about it, especially people who aren't football or sports fans.
No, man.
People will watch, but they won't care as much. If it's Patriots-Vikings, that's the ideal matchup the NFL wants.
Are you kidding me?
No, this is the worst matchup if it's Eagles-Jaguars, I think.
No, it's not. Eagles, I'm sorry, Vikings-Jaguars is the worst matchup.
No, well, the Vikings have home field. That's a thing. That's why.
Oh, yeah, true.
So the home field aspect.
No. I mean, but the thing is, nobody's still going to watch. I'm talking about, obviously, the people in Minnesota will care.
But I think that makes for a good storyline in terms of the first team ever in football history to have home field. I think people are intrigued by that, and I think people root for that.
So then they will want to see.
But if you're seeing Nick Foles versus Blake Bortles, I mean, you might as well watch poop versus diarrhea. I mean, that's essentially what you're watching. So
yeah,
we'll see. It's going to be interesting. Two good matchups. Let's see if the Jaguars shock the world. George Reister, follow him on Twitter at George Reister and check out The Unafraid Show on Facebook. George, always good talking to you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, great talking to you too, Jake.
All right, man. Take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.